streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Maybe you know my guest today from her Twitter takedowns of Gwyneth Paltrow and the wellness industry. She's called Paltrow's company Goop the, quote, fast food of health, and compared its supposedly wellness-boosting wares to snake oil. But offline, Dr. Jen Gunter has been an obstetrician and gynecologist for the better part of 3 decades, allowing her to bust medical myths you might have heard from maybe your mom or even your doctor and definitely the internet. And in her new book, The Vagina Bible, Gunter pushes back against rampant misinformation about women's bodies. She's on a crusade to slay health fads with medical facts. So this hour on Point, a conversation with Dr. Jen Gunter and the truth about women's health. And you can join us. What questions do you have for Dr. Gunter? What has your experience been trying to navigate health information about women's bodies online? And I'm just going to put it out there. Have you ever been tempted to try those jade eggs? Did you? How did it go? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And yes, we are going to give a gentle warning to listeners because of the nature of Dr. Gunter's book. The hour will be addressing matters of sexual health, and some folks may find that inappropriate for younger audiences. But joining us now from New York is Dr. Jen Gunter. She's an obstetrician and gynecologist, a columnist for the New York Times, and star of a new series from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation called Gensplaining. And her new book is The Vagina Bible, The Vulva and the Vagina, Separating Myth from Medicine. Dr. Gunter, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, I'm only laughing because your book is actually, it's full of good humor as well. But first of all, let me ask you, why did you want to write this? Why was this the time to try and slay some myths about women's bodies?
Well, you know, we really are in the age of misinformation. I think we've kind of sailed right through the age of information and we're stalled here. And, you know, I've been writing about myths online for some time and, you know, writing for many different outlets. And a couple of years ago, I had a day where I saw 5 or 6 women in a row in my, you know, clinic that's dedicated to the vagina and vulva. And they, each one of them had this piece of misinformation that they felt was true. And when I explained it to them that, you know, the facts and the medicine, each one said, how did I not know that? And I heard that all day. How did I not know that? How did I not know that? And that kind of got stuck in my head. And I started thinking, okay, every one of these people literally has a pocket computer. They literally have the library of all things with them. And how can we not get that information from A to B in a relatable way that speaks to people? And so I was sitting in my office and I still have textbooks that I use that that are, you know, anatomy books or pathology books. And I was staring at my bookshelf and I just thought, women need a textbook. They need a textbook, something they can pull off the shelves. And when the next fad comes up or the next piece of information they hear or – and I appreciate that a lot of reason that misinformation happens is women have difficult interactions with physicians. They can pull my book off the shelf.
So – but didn't we already have that in our bodies ourselves for decades?
Well, that book wasn't written by a physician. And that book actually has a lot of misinformation. That book tells women that you could use garlic or yogurt in your vagina for a yeast infection.
It does? I don't remember seeing that part in Our Bodies Ourselves.
Well, I have a screenshot of that page from online on my computer. So, yeah. And that was in the 1970s. And you know what? There is so much more information that we have. And we're in a digital age. And we have a 24/7 news cycle with headlines. And we know a lot more also about the clitoris and other structures and about sexually transmitted infections than we needed – than we had then. And so I thought women needed a physician to write a book for them.
Okay. So since you mentioned – yogurt and probiotics. This is one of the myths that you try to bust in your book. Why does eating yogurt not prevent infection, vaginal infections?
Well, you know, it's your lactobacilli in your vagina, which are your good bacteria, and they're the gatekeepers, and they keep the vaginal pH low, and they produce all the good stuff that makes the vagina the amazing organ that it is. You can't replace that lactobacilli by eating yogurt. It doesn't have the right strains of lactobacilli. So yogurt's great. It tastes good. If you like it, eat it. Don't put it in your vagina. Again, it doesn't have the right kinds of lactobacilli. And it feels soothing. It's probably just because it's a cream, just like a yeast medicine might feel soothing. But I wouldn't use it because we also don't know the effects of putting the wrong strains of lactobacilli in your vagina.
So let me just ask you a broad question about putting things down there. Like, why is it that we seem to have centuries of advice for women about, like, if you have this problem, stick something in your vagina? I mean, because like, does any of that work?
Well, no. That's the short answer. I think that, you know, for so long, you know, women haven't even been able to say the word vagina publicly.
Yeah.
Many women don't know that you use the vulva for the external part and the vagina for the internal. And if you don't allow people to use the right words, you impart shame into that. So there's been this communication error. Medicine really has only recently understood a lot of things about the vagina, the ecosystem. This is all really relatively new in the past 20 or 30 years. And obviously, 100 years ago, people made do with what they had. I mean, we don't recommend your headache specialist use a therapy from 100 years ago. So why should your gynecologist?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to play a little bit of tape about another fad. This is the Gwyneth Paltrow recommendation that she made on late night TV with host Jimmy Kimmel back in 2017 about the jade egg that her company Goop sold. Here's what Paltrow said.
The jade egg is an ancient Chinese practice where women insert the jade egg in their lady parts.
Right.
And to help tone the pelvic floor.
How does it help do that?
I don't know. I need to start my jade egg practice.
You've never been on this website before, have you?
So right then and there, Gwyneth Paltrow is saying she doesn't even know how this thing works that she's trying to sell. But Dr. Gunter, before I get to you, let's actually go to Maria, who's calling from Miami, Florida. And Maria, you've bravely called in to tell us about your experience with the jade egg.
Hi, yes. I actually feel very upset about the fact that this fight is going around because, you know, I wanted to, you know, like empower myself, take care of my body, take myself on in a new way. And I found out about these jade eggs, and I used one in the way that they advised, and I actually ended up getting a UTI. Mm-hmm. And upon further research, I found out that there is no real benefit or there's no historical background on these jade eggs. So I felt very upset after telling so many friends about it, too. So yeah. I felt exploited afterwards.
Well, Maria, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Gunter, first of all, I just want to say thanks again to Maria because we are, you know, we're talking about sensitive issues here. And anyone who calls in to share their story, I'm very grateful for it. First of all, can you just respond to Maria saying that she wanted to try this because she wanted to feel empowered about taking care of her body? I mean, that's got to be something that resonates so much with so many women.
Absolutely, it does. And I also want to thank Maria for calling in because it is hard to share those things because society makes it difficult. But I think what's really fascinating about sites like Goop and a lot of wellness sites is they take things that are basically a grift or are, you know, certainly not feminist, because it's not feminist to give people lies about their bodies. And they package it with a faux feminism ribbon. And so it makes people think that they're empowering themselves when really what they're doing is they've just branded snake oil somehow and people have accepted it as feminism. And I think it's because medicine has done a poor job of listening to women and listening to their concerns. And so if someone is listening to you and they're giving you the allure that they're trying to help you or the illusion they're trying to help you, you're going to resonate with them. Everybody wants someone who they think is caring for them. But as Maria found out, you know, these are a modern grift. They're not any kind of ancient, you know, secret. But I don't want to use an ancient practice. I want to use modern medicine. And so, you know, I think that's a classic example of someone, the celebrity not knowing what they're talking mm-hmm. about, promoting a product, and then someone getting harmed.
Well, so, I mean, the claim that Paltrow makes about the jade egg toning the pelvic floor, tell us why that's not true.
Well, so you can – toning your pelvic floor is certainly something that can be very helpful if you have a medical condition, for example, incontinence. So pelvic floor exercises, Kegel exercises are very helpful for that. The thing is you can do them without any aid just as well as not. So you can sit around at a traffic light while you're having dinner. You can do your Kegel exercises any time of day if you want to. You can even practice them on a partner during sex. So lots of fun ways to do Kegels. There's also products called vaginal weights, which are progressively heavier objects that you retain in your vagina to help contract the pelvic floor. The weights don't stimulate the muscles. You have to contract your muscles around the weights. But you need to use progressively heavier and heavier objects. Studies tell us that they're no better than just doing your Kegel exercises alone. So, you know, some people like to run on a treadmill. Some people like to run outside. That's kind of the difference between using weights and just doing Kegels. So where the jade egg comes in is, first of all, it's not graduated in weights. We have no idea how to clean it. And we don't even know if it's really jade. And, you know, jade has a degree of being porous and bacteria could harbor in there. How would we clean that? So, and of course, the way they promoted it on Goop, they suggested that women would put it in their vagina and they would walk around all day with it in, and that's not how you would use it. And of course, Goop also suggested that this would harness your feminine energy, which I find offensive. My feminine energy is not from my vagina. I feel it's from my brain. And I also, the idea that it would balance your hormones, which is clearly not possible.
Mm. Well, we're getting a lot of response from people hearing you on the radio right now, Dr. Gunter. On Twitter, Jennifer McCarthy says, listening to Jen Gunter, and I have been having my women issues. I'm a teacher and work with hundreds of women, no one talks to each other. When I opened up about my problems, every woman I talked to had the same or similar problems. Why aren't women talking more openly? Well, we'll get Dr. Gunter to answer that question when we come back. We are speaking with Dr. Jen Gunter. She's an OBGYN. She's also a columnist for the New York Times. She has a new book out called The Vagina Bible, The Vulva and the Vagina, Separating Myth from the Medicine. And we want to know what your questions are for Dr. Gunter. Have you tried things recommended to you that maybe you weren't sure there was a science behind it? Why do you think it's so hard for women to find accurate medical information about their own bodies? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Dr. Jen Gunter. She is an OBGYN, a columnist for the New York Times. She has a new series on the CBC called Gensplaining, and she's author of a new book called The Vagina Bible, The Vulva and the Vagina, Separating the Myth from the Medicine. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And again, a gentle reminder, you can tell right there from the title of Dr. Gunter's book that we are going to be talking about issues that may not be appropriate for all audiences. Okay, so Dr. Gunter, I'm going to take a deep breath here, because what I want to ask you has to do with exactly the warning that I just gave to listeners, that even in this day and age, in 2019, we feel compelled to acknowledge audience sensitivities. And I'm not saying that they're wrong to have those sensitivities, but acknowledge that those sensitivities are there about discussions around female physiology, that we have to say, like, this may not be appropriate for all audiences. I mean, I've had editorial meetings in years past where we were saying, can we even say the word vagina on the air? Would that be too much? Can we say breasts on the air. Would that cross a line? I mean, I know that we talked to you before the show saying not only can you not use language that's sexually explicit, but maybe you shouldn't use language that's too medically explicit. I mean, is this part of the problem about why it's hard for women to even talk to each other about their bodies?
Absolutely. When you can't say an anatomical term, you're then implying that there's shame with it. And the patriarchy has baked layers and layers and layers of shame onto the experience of being a woman. And that comment that you read from Twitter ties in exactly with what you've just said, that even amongst, because it's been going on generationally, you know, since the beginning of time, that this is dirty, this isn't something to talk about. Women don't benefit from that, clearly. And so what happens is, even if you're out at a dinner party with your friends, you know, you can say, oh, I have migraines. And then maybe three or four people around the table be like, oh, I have migraines, or my sister has migraines, and they tried this, and they tried this, and you can gather more information. But for some reason, the ability to say, well, I'm having this vaginal problem shuts everybody up. Of course, unless you're at dinner with me, and then there, the conversation flows freely. And so that's actually a very important reason for me why I have vagina on the title and both vagina and vulva on the front of the book, because I feel even seeing this on your friend's bookshelf, lying around, you know, a store, someone reading it on the subway, that if I only do one thing mm-hmm. with this book, I want to make it the same to say the word vagina as it is yeah. elbow.
But, you know, I think I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to say it's not just public radio, right? I mean, Twitter temporarily blocked mention of your yeah. book for the same reason.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's not just public radio. It's television. It's conversation. It's on, you know, on buses. You know, my friends are asking me questions. We're on a bus. I'll be like, oh, well, my vagina is this. And everybody's like, oh, you know. And so I think that it's really important. I mean, you know, my first piece for The New York Times was, my vagina is terrific and your opinion about it is not.
And, well, so to be fair, before we go on like sort of a patriarchy smashing free for all, it's not just discomfort about talking about women's bodies. I think is it not discomfort around talking about bodies and health in general? Because I know there's a lot of women out there who would say, like, they just, you know, their young kids might listen to a show like On Point, and they just don't want they don't think their kids are ready for it.
Well, I mean, my kids have been exposed to this since they were born, because I write about vaginas and vulvas, and there's stuff all over the house. And
they survived.
They survived. They're certainly, you know, they feel very educated. I presented it. So I think it's really important as how you present the information. Mm-hmm. And I feel that facts never harm people. And so if you can present information in a non-sophomoric, factual way that's relevant and people can – that resonates with people, how is that harmful? How do facts harm people? I mean, we teach children from a very young age about wearing seatbelts. That doesn't encourage kids to drive dangerously when they get their licenses.
Yeah. Well, on this point, this very point, let's go to Margo, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Margo, you're on the air.
Hello. I am just so excited for this conversation. I can't believe that I, on this Thursday, got the opportunity to just talk about my vagina on air. This is amazing. It wasn't until the middle of college when I was living with women that we really started to talk about ourselves, and even for me to learn about, like, cleaning myself. I mean, I was, like, literally 20 when I learned about that. And I think that, yeah, in kind of 21st century feminism, vaginas and breasts are on coffee mugs, they're on t-shirts, but this science, these scientific mm-hmm. research and what your guest is talking about, like, let's use scientific evidence to take care of ourselves, is so important, because I do think that, you know, goop, I'm susceptible to goop. I've looked at it, you know, I can't afford anything on the website, but just, it is a fad, yeah. And to really bring it back to science, not only the feminism side is really important to know that I can, you know, talk about my mm-hmm. vagina, but know what I'm talking about is really important. Yeah. So I'm so excited to read this book, and I'm so happy you're having this conversation.
Well, Margot, thank you for your call. Dr. Gunter, how would you like to respond to Margot?
I would say that I hear that experience reflected back to me in the office every single day. I hear it with my friends. You know, I hear it with people I meet on airplanes. I mean, people say, what do you do? I tell them. And then all of a sudden, this permission exists for people to start talking to me about their, you know, their vaginas and their vulvas and their sexual problems. And when you don't have the information, it's hard for you to know what's wrong if you're having symptoms. It's hard for you to communicate with your doctor. And if your doctor doesn't give you the right terminology to use, then you're kind of stuck. And then what happens is you go online and you see someone talking about your vagina who's like a goop site. And they're the only people giving you information. So that's where you go. Or you walk into a drugstore and you see shelves and shelves of products designed to tame a normal, healthy vulva and vagina. So what are you naturally going to think? Well, no one else is talking about it. I guess I should use these products.
Aren't people supposed to get this information from their doctors, though?
Well, I think yes and no. I mean, I think that there are so many problems with the healthcare system and communication. That would be a year of shows probably to talk about it. And I think that in general, for some reason, it's hard for people to talk about sex. It's even hard for some doctors to do it. And that gets back to the fact if every single person could talk about vagina and vulva like it's no big deal, because it's no big deal, it's a body part, that would help. It would help physicians as well. But also, medicine has done a poor job. There are all these gaps in medicine with communication, with how we treat people, how we listen to women. And so those gaps are so easy to exploit. And so I want to fill those gaps, and sites like Goop or the wellness industry is exploiting those gaps. Mm.
Well, on this point, actually, let's talk to Andrew, who's calling from Boston. Andrew, what's your question for Dr. Gunter?
Hi. I'm also a physician, actually, recently trained, and I was wondering on related topic whether you feel that other healthcare providers, not just from the communication side, but from the knowledge side, are being either misinformed or trained in such a way that it's not providing the correct information to their patients about women's bodies?
That's a great question. I think yes. I think part of the reason, I think we learn, you know, the hardcore science, you know, why do people have abnormal bleeding? How do we treat that? Why do people have itch? How do we treat that? But we do a poor job actually teaching doctors how to communicate with people about their bodies, about their symptoms, making them feel heard. And then there's a large way that women live their lives, like pubic hair removal or using menstrual products or how to wash your vulva. And that's not really taught in medical school. We see people when they have problems related to those things. So we kind of know how, we know how to treat toxic shock syndrome. We know how to treat contact dermatitis from using a soap. But we don't know how to actually inform people about those things. And so that's why I spent a significant amount of time on that in the book, to really figure out where we were, at least with what we know. And so I'm hoping that healthcare providers will read that as well. So I'm trying to empower women, but also give healthcare providers the language that I use every day, because this is my area of expertise.
Well, so this is really important because, I mean, some of the misinformation, if I can call it that, that I think that women have comes from their doctors, right? I mean, I think a lot of folks will say, well, I've heard my very own doctor say, if I want to avoid a UTI, got to drink a lot of cranberry juice, right? Or if I want to avoid a UTI, it's best to urinate right after intercourse. And in the book, you say neither of those things are true?
Yeah, neither of them are true. I mean, cranberry juice has been pretty much dispelled, and most of the studies were funded by the cranberry juice industry. It's so funny. People are all against big pharma, but they don't realize that so many of these other non-pharmaceutical places, you know, also fund studies. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is the idea behind cranberry juice was a valid hypothesis. So, you know, 20 years ago, someone had that hypothesis, and we recommended it because the science wasn't there to say otherwise. And then people start doing the studies, and it's so hard to get rid of bad information, right? Dogma sticks. So you heard that thing about cranberry juice when you were in your first year of residency or right when you graduated, and that piece sticks with you. So just like it's so hard to undo misinformation about anything, it's the same in medicine as well.
I full disclosure, I might know someone who's chugged tons of cranberry juice in an attempt at self-care. But what about the advice to, again, that sometimes comes from medical professionals about urinating after intercourse to avoid a urinary tract infection?
Yeah, so one of the big secrets of medicine that I'm going to tell everybody is that a lot of the things we tell people, some dude wrote in a textbook in 1950, and it's just been perpetuated. And, you know, maybe it was a valid hypothesis in the 50s or 60s or 70s when we didn't have the science we have today. But, you know, I got that information about, you know, and I had sort of heard about the peeing after, you know, emptying your bladder after sex. And I thought, that doesn't really make any sense to me, looking at the biology of urinary tract infections. And, you know, the recommendation is there's no data to support it. And
I have heard this from doctors even recently. There's no data to support it.
There's no data to support it. And I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But I think there's a difference between saying to someone that there's a hardcore medical recommendation for something. And if you've heard it and you want to try it, well, it's your body and your choice. Right.
Okay.
And so I think there's that. But, you know, we tell women all we twist them in all these ways with all these things that, well, it can't hurt. Wear white cotton underwear. Don't use this kind of soap. Pee after sex. Do this, do this, do this. And then they're not any better. And then they feel broken because they've done so many things and they're not where they need to be. And every single thing we tell people should be quality information based on the best data that we have. So sometimes the best data are good studies. Sometimes it's what we call expert opinion. And sometimes it's kind of the best we can based on sort of hypothesis.
What about wet bathing suits as a cause?
Yeah, I'm like, how? I don't even understand the biology behind that. Also, your bathing suit doesn't stay wet all day. That's kind of the point of the fabric. It's fast drying. Has nobody worn a bathing suit? Am I the only person who's worn a bathing suit?
Well, it stays wet for a while, and it's wet. It's wet, you know, in a... Oh my gosh, I was about to say down there. It's
wet. On your vulva?
Yes. You see, even I'm struggling. I'm trying to be a mature woman about this, but even I'm struggling, and I have to admit that. I'm sorry.
No, never apologize. Women should never – we always apologize. Never say you're sorry unless you're stepping on someone's foot on accident, you know? Like, only say you're sorry if you've done something bad on purpose. I think that there's no data to support it. It biologically doesn't make any sense. And, you know, we know from – infants and skin irritation and wearing diapers, it requires occlusive garments to actually increase your risk of an infection. So if you're wearing, you know, diapers with a plastic backing because you have terrible incontinence and that moisture is pushed against your skin, what can happen is you can develop something called maceration. The skin gets irritated from being wet. And that's very easy for people to confuse with a yeast infection. We know that 50 to 70% of women who self-diagnose with a yeast infection don't have yeast. They have something else. And if the irritation is external on your vulva, it's almost never a yeast infection unless you've got a big rash.
I see.
So what happens is you can get irritated from having wet against your skin, just like you could if you were wearing wet socks, right? If you go hiking and you walk through a puddle and the sock is wet, your skin is irritated, right, at the end of the hike, and you take it off and like, oh, that feels nasty. That's maceration. So that's what can happen from wet garments. That's not a yeast infection.
Okay, so we've talked about sort of what doesn't work in terms of preventing urinary tract infections for women. I want to do some service journalism here and ask you, what does work? What should women be doing?
So for bladder infections, for urinary tract infections,
yes.
Well, I think the very first thing they should do is they should get an accurate diagnosis from their doctor to make sure they're truly having recurrent infections. Being diagnosed over the phone with an acute infection, if you meet the criteria, is totally fine. And you can totally be treated over the phone for a bladder infection, for an acute bladder infection. But if you're having a chronic infection, if you're having three or more infections a year, you really should see a urogynecologist. Or a urologist who has a greater understanding of that. Because it may be that you have a resistant organism, right? And that needs to be treated differently. Mm-hmm. There could be other things going on. So I would say to sort of not pay attention to those sort of not homeopathic, but things you read on the internet. And the very first thing is to get a correct diagnosis and know the organism that you're treating and then take it from there.
Okay. Well, so just quickly, we've got about a minute to go before we have to take a quick break. You talked about diagnosis over the phone, that's okay. But isn't that one of the reasons why we're getting some of these resistant strains of bacteria? Because like doctors are handing out sulfa drugs every time a woman calls them up on the phone?
No. So what's happening is people aren't following the guidelines.
I see.
There are very strict guidelines for diagnosing people remotely for bladder infections, and you need to follow those. And so, yes, inappropriate antibiotic prescriptions are a big driver. If everybody used the correct way to diagnose it over the phone, I don't think we'd have that problem.
All right. Well, we are talking this hour with Dr. Jen Gunter. She's author of the new book, The Vagina Bible, The Vulva and the Vagina, Separating the Myth from the Medicine. And as you can hear, she definitely has a lot of science that combats a lot of the myths that we maybe see on TV, definitely find on the internet, and sometimes even in our own doctor's offices. So what's your question for Dr. Gunter? We got a lot of listeners lined up already, Dr. Gunter. We'll hear from them when we come back. This is On Point.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Dr. Jen Gunter. She's an OBGYN, a columnist for the New York Times. She has a new series on the CBC called Gensplaining, and a new book out. It's called The Vagina Bible, The Vulva and the Vagina, Separating the Myth from the Medicine. And we want to know what your questions are for Dr. Gunter. Let's go right to Mary, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Mary, you're on the air.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jen. I really love the fact that you're looking at all of this information objectively and opening up these difficult discussions, and the fact that you're also challenging medical advice from the 1950s. I wanted to mention, you had said something about sexually transmitted diseases in the beginning of your program, and I'm sure you're an expert on that area. I have been independently looking at vaccines for 40 years. And what I have noticed is after the Gardasil cervical cancer vaccine was released, there's a whole lot of post-market analysis or surveillance indicating that young girls who get this are suffering with ovarian failure. I mean, you can simply Google, Gardasil cancer deaths and ovarian failure, and you can now see it showing up in the scientific literature. By the way, I was just curious if you had looked into this at all, and how you feel about the Gardasil cancer vaccine, being that it's a new vaccine.
Absolutely. I know a lot about the vaccine. I actually did a fellowship in infectious diseases, so I'm actually a specialist in human papillomavirus. All of the data that that suggests that link is actually poorly done data that is incredibly biased and in lower quality publications. And actually, there are very high quality post-marketing surveillance done by the CDC that shows that there's absolutely no link with autoimmune conditions with the HPV vaccine. There is absolutely no link with ovarian failure. And in fact, I'm out dating again, and I myself just recently got the HPV vaccine. It's very safe. I had my boys vaccinated when they were 12 or 13, and it is incredibly safe. And that's a great example of how misinformation spreads around the internet and how Google is not the best way to start your search on really any medical topic. So the HPV vaccine is totally safe. Countries that have had great uptake are really on track to eliminate cervical cancer, and they will probably get rid of the other, I think there's 8 other cancers related to the human papillomavirus. It's one of the greatest inventions of my time in medicine.
So, Dr. Gunter, Mary's question actually opens up a really important line of conversation here. And that is, Mary said when she looked online, she found scientific journals. Now, if you're not a Dr. Jen Gunter, someone who's practiced obstetrics and gynecology for 30 years, how are you supposed to discern what the high-quality journals are from the low-quality journals?
That's why you can't trust Google for your initial internet search or any browser, because you're going to get what's going to come up as most popular is going to be related on so many different things. And it's important. Many people don't know there are these journals called predatory journals where you can pay to get your work published. And those are absolutely not peer reviewed. So I always tell people you want to start your search in a professional, medical professional society. So if I wanted information about the HPV vaccine, I would go to the American Academy of Pediatrics or the American College of OBGYN or the CDC. And I would go and search internally in those sites, and I would look for I would put in HPV vaccine, because medical professional societies create incredible patient handouts. They have good vetted information. Mm-hmm. The people who write these things have to disclose their bias. These are the people who know the difference between a good quality journal, what's not a good quality. And so I would say start there, because the first piece of information you get is going to bias you, you know, either to the truth, so you have the right information, or if you start with the wrong information, then that sends you down an internet rabbit hole.
Like you said, such a good point. That first link that you click is really, mm-hmm. really important. If I may, though, Dr. Gunter, and I hope mm-hmm. this is okay.
Sure.
You have some personal experience with how powerful the draw is to try and find information, right? I mean, you're around the pregnancy and birth of your children. Yeah. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I was pregnant with triplets. Because, of course, when you're an OBGYN, you get to have the most complicated pregnancy. And I delivered my first son at 22 and a half weeks, who passed away. And then I managed to stay pregnant for 3.5 more weeks. And my boys were born at 26 weeks, weighing 1 pound 11 ounces and 1 pound 13 ounces.
Wow.
And they were in the intensive care unit for 3 to 4 months. And I have these wonderful 16-year-old boys because of evidence-based medicine, because of incredible scientific discovery. And my son Oliver, because being 1 pound 11 ounces wasn't enough of a challenge, also had a very serious heart defect that needed surgery. And he's had a couple of procedures and multiple stays in the intensive care unit. And my son Victor was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. So I know what it's like to have children who have unfixable medical conditions. And I know what it's like to slog away with physical therapy with your kid every day and not see any progress, or have a heart and look at this heart on ultrasound and you know it's enlarged and you know that that's not fixable. And one night I was Googling, doing all the things I advise against, and I fell onto a website with a stem cell clinic, and they could regenerate heart muscle, and they could help kids with cerebral palsy. And I seriously thought about emptying my bank account and taking my kids. I seriously thought about it. So I get the lure. I get it. And that's why it's so important to me, because I've been there.
Mm. Well, let's go to Vonda, who's calling from Sarasota, Florida. Vonda, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Dr. Gunter, I just want to say thank you, first of all. And I'm originally from Europe, and we tend to be much more open about these things and just discuss a little bit more. And this weekend, I am celebrating my 50th birthday with 8 of my girlfriends, and your book will be in each one of their goodie bags to take home. And we have a sleepover, and I'm sure these books are going to be pulled out, and we're going to be reading and laughing and talking. So again, I just want to say thank you. You just made a difference.
Oh, thank you so much. And that sounds like an awesome sleepover, and I wish I could get invited.
Well, Vonda, thank you for your call. Let's go to Ricky, who's calling from Norway, Maine. Ricky, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Gunter. I have a question about cannabis for sexual enhancement. It seems like there are many cannabis products on the market now that market themselves towards females, saying that cannabis is an ancient medicine and enhancement method that women have used forever. And I just want to know your thoughts on that, or if you know anything about it.
I know a lot about it. I'm also board certified in pain medicine, so I'm very familiar with cannabis, and I have a whole chapter on it in the book. You know,
just because something's ancient doesn't mean it's good. I mean, arsenic was an ancient therapy, and that's also natural. So I think it's really important for people to know that if someone is telling you that cannabis can enhance your sexual experience, we don't have data on that. So it might or might not. We also have some data to suggest that the levels of your natural endocannabinoids actually go down when you're sexually excited. So we don't really know. You know, some people do report they have better sexual experiences with cannabis, and some people report they don't. We don't know if it's because it reduces anxiety. We don't know if what we don't know what we don't know. There's also a very sparse data on what that could do if you put it in your vagina. So you should never assume that putting something in your vagina is safe just because it's, you know, natural or a plant or any product, because the ecosystem in the vagina is quite delicate, like all ecosystems, whether it's, you know, it's a garden basically. And there is some older data that suggests that cannabis could affect glycogen, which is the storage sugar in the vagina that keeps the good bacteria healthy. And there is one study that shows that people who use cannabis are more likely to be colonized with yeast, and it's a good quality study. They actually cultured women. So I would say that with that information, you make an informed choice about what you want to do with your body.
Dr. Gunter, we've got a question that's come in online. I think it's a great question, actually. Should men read your book?
You bet. Everybody who spends any time, you know, around a vagina or near a vagina should read it. But, you know, I think that it's really important for people who don't have vaginas to understand the experience, because I really talk a lot, write a lot about the experience of what it's like to have this misinformation. And just like I would love to be informed about the way men get bad information, I think if we all learn things, facts help everybody. And, you know, I've actually had quite a few dads contact me over the years who are single dads who say, you know, my daughter was trying to figure out pads and tampons and I didn't know what to do. And I found your blog and this was great information and thank you. So I think that the book, you know, could help a lot of people. And I hope a lot of men read it as well.
Well, sort of on related to that question, let's go to Emerson, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Emerson, you're on the air.
Hi, Megan, thank you so much. Dr. Gunter, my question is, being that you work in OBGYN, how do you see the future of menstrual health medicine as it pertains to people who are transgender, non-binary, and how that will affect them? As someone who's a member of the transgender community, a lot of us have experienced just like discomfort, or they don't want to go to their OBGYN because the care that they receive, you know, is not exactly the most welcoming, or is just something that makes them extremely uncomfortable. How do you think this could change or improve?
Well, I always want to apologize when people have had those experiences, because that's not how it should be. You need the health care you need, and people should always be treated with respect. They should get the pronouns that they want to have used. And that's one of the reasons why the third chapter in the book is on vulvas and vaginas in transition, because I wanted to put all the information out there as best as I could to say that this is all part of the healthcare experience if you have a vagina and vulva. And I know that many trans people and gender non-binary people have to educate their own provider about their care. And I think, how would I feel if I went to my son's cardiologist and I had to explain to him about the heart care he needed? That wouldn't make me feel good. So I'm trying to fix that as well by giving information in the book and showing it's important. I had a mom contact me who has a trans boy on hormone blockers. And she said my book gave her more information than anyone had given her. And on one hand, I'm super happy about that, but that breaks my heart. Like, that information should have been easily coming from their providers. So All I can say is thank you for all the advocates for speaking up. And I've heard you, and I'm trying to do the best that I can in the way that I'm trying.
So, Dr. Gunter, in the last couple of minutes that we have here, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your Twitter feed. Ladies and gentlemen, she's laughing because if you haven't seen Dr. Gunter's Twitter feed, go check it out. She's bold. You're unafraid to be combative. I'm looking at a couple of tweets from a few days ago, and a group called LifeNews.com tweeted at you and said you were really out of touch. And LifeNews.com said the family values ideal is that young women, men and women wait until marriage to have fulfilling sexual relationships. And then you responded and you said, no, you are trying to impose the patriarchy on everyone and it's gross. The family values ideal is a subservient woman. Expletive, expletive, expletive. Now, look, I actually have a serious question for you about this. As entertaining as Twitter might be, there are many places where there's a strong overlap between the reduction, say, in sex ed in schools and groups and the influence of groups like LifeNews.com. I would make the argument that these are exactly the people who perhaps are in most need of a book like yours. But if you tangle with them in the way that you do on Twitter, aren't you alienating the people who might need your information the most?
I don't think so. So first of all, Life News is never going to interview me. So, there's that. And I have no time for lies about women's bodies. So we know from the vaccine literature, and I've sort of extrapolated from this, that really only about 10% of people who are anti-vaccine are hardcore, conspiracy theorists. And I really believe from talking with people who don't understand about abortion and contraception that it's about the same. You know, there's this hardcore 10%, but there's also these other people who get exposed to these myths by contamination. And I feel like when I reply to an account like that, I give other people the language to use. So when people lie about women's bodies, a lot of times people have a hard time countering it because they don't know the science and they don't know the facts. And I feel when I reply, I can give other people the verbiage and the terminology to use. So then maybe when they're sitting around the dinner table with someone, maybe they can use those words. Because when you've done the procedures and you've counseled people and you know more about it, you can just reply. And also sometimes you need to rally the troops. And it's not okay to lie about women's bodies. And I'm here to say that.
I mean, are these folks lying or are they just misinformed? Are you missing an opportunity to inform them?
Well, I'm never going to inform Life News. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're a propaganda site. So they're not going to listen to me. It might be super cool if someone who kind of follows them sees that retweet and then it makes them think about it. So I think that, you have to sort of choose how you engage with different people. And I'm not saying I have all the answers and I'm certainly not saying that I'm perfect with the way I respond. But I think that speaking in euphemisms mm-hmm. and not countering misinformation has got us where we are. And when I was 16, I thought we'd have equality, and we don't yet.
Well, Dr. Jen Gunter, she is an OBGYN and a columnist for the New York Times. Her new book is The Vagina Bible, The Vulva and the Vagina, Separating Myth from Medicine. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Dr. Gunter, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And folks, before we wrap up the show today, I want to let you know that in September, it's back to school time, everyone. So we are running a special series. It's called The 50-Year Fight, Solutions for Closing the Achievement Gap. And we're going to take a look at what is working in certain districts and certain schools to close achievement gaps and why. So that's going to be Mondays next month. And we want you to be a part of this series. What do you see in your district? What are schools doing to address the achievement gap where you live? We have a special survey about this. It's at onpointradio.org. And do let us know. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.